don't you give me an intro? We'll start there.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now I have to think of a hook.
Yep.
No, man, I'm Matthew McKee. I'm from Boise, Idaho. I grew up here. I'm a Californian, you know, God forbid. But I lived here for most of my life. So my mom moved me here when I was a kid. I joined the military when I was 17 as a light wheel mechanic because I was a pacifist back then.
Really?
Yeah. And I went because I had a partial scholarship to USC for football. And that was kind of my mom's dream for me to play football there. And there was no way for me to afford the rest of it. So I was like, oh, I'll join the military and get them to pay for it. And then through going through basic training and AIT, I kind of thought, you know, like, oh, maybe I'm cut out for this. And I immediately switched from a mechanic into a combat medic. And I was
what branch?
Army.
Army. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Army. And ended up switching from that to PsyOps and went through a local selection for 19th group just to see if that was something that I wanted to do. And that was towards the very end of my Army career. And that was about eight years in. The Army pissed me off because there was like some recruiting issues. Like I wanted to go active duty, and switch and get the 18 series, you know,
yep.
Contract. And they're like, oh no, well, the best we can do is get you an infantry contract.
Mm.
But we'll get you airborne, we promise.
Once you get in.
Yeah, yeah.
Once
you get in. And I was like, nah, dude, like I've been in for 8 years. Like I get this. Like I know the game, you know. Yeah. Like give me 18 series and I'll re-enlist. And they just like wouldn't, they're like, we can't do that. Sorry, dude, we can't do that. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I ended up switching over to Air Force, became a TACP, went through the pipeline and
okay.
Yeah.
All right. You've done a lot. So, what part of California are you from?
Oceanside.
Oh, damn. You had to deal with all the Marines?
Yeah.
I mean, you still went Army, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I could probably see that.
Yeah.
If I had to live around. See, so I'm from Clayton, New York, originally upstate.
Okay.
So, 10th Mountain Division is 20 minutes south of us. So, I had to deal with all the, we call them the bum drums.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So, I could see that. So, after you joined the Army, where was boot camp?
That was
or basic. What do you guys have?
Yeah, it's basic. Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
How was that? That's a culture shock.
Oh my God. I hate Oklahoma with a passion.
Why?
Just the weather. Like it was, I mean, I remember this one time. We were PTing at like 3:30 in the morning, you know, just typical basic training stuff. And we're in shorts and a t-shirt because it's like 70 degrees and it just gets hotter throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like super dry. So the wind and windy. So the grass is very dry and the wind will pick up and like slice you. Like it's just like a little paper cuts, you know?
Well, you got those California sandal feet. So, you know,
if I'm not on a beach, I'm just not comfortable.
Yeah. Right.
And then one day our drill sergeants always said, hey, as long as you guys are dressed like us, you're okay. You're good. And then one day we go out to formation like nothing else in our summers and it's 30 degrees, you know, and we're just like shivering.
It shifts
like,
that much there?
Yeah. It was wild. I mean, I didn't have a thermometer, so I'm probably exaggerating, but it was hot to cold, you know, summers
absolutely.
To winter PTs. And they walk out, they stroll out like 20 minutes of us just standing in formation and they're like smoking us. Cause they're like, what are you privates doing? We told you to dress like us. And obviously like there was no way for us to see what they were dressed like.
Good games. The games that are always
freaking
played.
Games. Yeah, exactly.
I tell people boot camp was, for me, boot camp was one of the most memorable parts of the military for me. I mean, if you take yourself and really break it down as like you're some just punk kid, most of us mm-hmm. were not giving a crap. And then all of a sudden you're just thrown into pure structure. I mean, overnight. And that's where I discovered, I mean, my when I realized I really like had no idea what I signed up for was mm-hmm. in the airport when we landed and they told me to get nut to butt on a dude. And I looked at the guy like, I don't know what nut to butt means.
Yeah.
And then they just shove you into another dude's back. And so your nose is on the back of his head and obviously nuts on his butt. And that's when I was like, I fucked up.
Yeah.
I didn't sign up for this.
So my moment was we got 4 minutes and they like set a timer to call our parents and like, hey, this is our mailing address. I can't talk to you from now on, but this is our mailing address. And of course this is like 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember and they give it to you and then they're like, okay, you got to take your phone and your battery out and put it in this box. And I'm just thinking like, how are we ever going to get our like match everything? But I was, you know, too fast to think. So I'm going through it And then I remember the timer goes off and I had my phone all apart and then I was like, oh, I accomplished a mission. But this one dude was still on the phone. He's like, I love you too, mama. You know, crocodile tears. The drill sergeant took the phone and to today, I do not know how he got away from this, and just like victory punts that freaking phone.
Times have changed.
It just blows up.
Times have changed.
Million pieces. And that's when I was like, oh, they can do whatever they want to us. Mm-hmm. Like we are not people in this area. Like we're not people anymore.
No, product of the government. So the phone call part is hilarious because you know, you see it in the videos mm-hmm. and like the little recruiting videos and stuff. So I get to boot camp. Well, unknown to me, like right before I leave, I left right after New Year's Eve. Well, on New Year's, we have like this going away party for me where all my buddies were still in high school. We all end up buzzing our heads that night. They're like, oh, Brian's going in the Marine Corps. Like, we're doing it for you. And I was like, okay, well, cool. Like, I was going to buzz when I get there, I guess. Uh-huh. So I buzzed my head right before we go. And then when I show up, you're doing your orientation. And they're separating people into platoons. Mm-hmm. They throw me into this platoon. And we're over there doing our, you know, getting our initial gear and doing whatever while the other platoon's making their initial phone call. Like, hey, this is Private Marshall. I made it to Parasite. Whatever. Yeah. I never got to make that call. So they put me in the wrong platoon. I was the wrong marshal. So while my platoon was getting their phone calls mm-hmm. and haircuts, I was doing like the SIF where I was getting checked in. Well, then we switch. And as we're switching, they're like, who are you? And I tell them, you're in the wrong platoon. Go to this platoon. Yeah. So now they're doing their SIF. So I just showed up and stood there. Well, I'd cut my hair like 3 days before, right before. So it's short. So now I look like I'm blended with these people. Uh-huh. So I never got to make my phone call. And so my parents never had a clue if I made it. Like, I can't be like, hey, I didn't make a phone call. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm scared shitless. Right. Like, you're just staring at the floor. Well, then like 3-4 days into boot camp, once we got picked up in our platoon, I got hazed all day for my hair. And I got labeled this hippie because they're like, how's your hair growing this fast? And I could try to explain to these drill instructors, like, this recruit was in this platoon and this, and they're like, shut up. You know, they just start hazing me over it. So everybody had a buzzed head and I had like fuzz. Like,
oh, no.
And so, dude, it was like, that was like, this is my life now. Yeah. Like, I screwed up so bad. Yeah. Like, I don't even know what I did. Like, it's not even my fault. And I'm just getting destroyed. Dude, there'd be a random drill instructor walk by and be like, get it just because of my hair. And I'm just like, I can't help it. Like, you know,
rule number one, don't be that guy.
And I was from the first day till I stepped on those footprints to the last day that I graduated, I was 100% that guy.
No,
I'm going to have so there's four dudes that I went to boot camp with, not with, but we met, we were in the same platoon and we ended up serving together for deployments. We went to schools together, hit the fleet together, so we're really close. And so I want to have them on and just talk, because it is, some of the stories are absolutely insane. So, but yeah, so you're at boot camp, which I would love to hear any more stories about that, because I love any basic training boot camp stories.
Yeah, another, I guess even before that, we were all getting off the buses, and you know, we have our like, we have our rucks on the front, and then we have our big A bags on the back, and we're like trying to waddle around as little 17-year-old like numbskulls, and trying to get off the bus as fast as possible. And I remember that one of the drill sergeants was in like by the driver, or he was the driver, and he was just standing like telling them, "Get out, get out, get out." And this is like bringing back even before that, we're like heads down and they're like, don't lift up your head. And they're like, why are you making eye contact? And then I remember the drill sergeant being like, I don't know. Can we curse on this?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
This is why.
This is for veterans by veterans. Like, can we curse? Like, I just nerded myself out.
That was the Air Force coming out.
Yeah, I know. Aim high. This drill sergeant was like, next person that makes eye contact, I'm going to rip you out of your seat and butt fuck your soul. I'm just like a 17-year-old like Christian boy, like,
never
God, don't butt fuck my soul.
Like, what did I, you're just sitting there staring at the floor like, I just want to go home.
Yeah.
I want to go home.
Mommy? Mom?
Yeah.
But we're like coming out of the bus and they're like, you know, jumping out and trying to go as fast as possible. Their privates are jumping all, like, dropping and like flipping all over the place. And one of these guys gets stuck, like his bag gets stuck and he can't quite turn. And the drill sergeant just like grabs both the seats and Sparta kicks this dude out. And then he's like sitting there like on his ruck, like a turtle. Just
can't roll. Dude, if they could get away with filming a Paris Island, any kind of boot camp, basic training would be the best, greatest reality show on the planet.
Oh,
just the pure,
sure.
The pure comedy that comes from drill instructors. Like, I've always wanted to go back and just watch, because like how they just completely just fuck with you all day over. And you're doing everything they're telling you and you still can't do right.
No,
so it's, God, I love it. I absolutely love
it. Just being a fly on the wall. But the problem is like, even if you're watching that, like from the safety of your couch, you still like can never understand. Like, you're like, why is that? Seven? Like, you could just leave, the gate is right there. Like you can just go, but you're in that moment. You're like
terrified.
So I always tell people that I really appreciate my drill instructors because they actually gave a shit, you know, they actually cared.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why they made our lives so fucking hard.
And what year was this?
This was 2011.
I got to ask, because this is the Marine in me. When did they come out with the timeout cards or the safety cards for the Army? That was a real thing.
I checked out. I know it was a real thing. I don't know. That was way after.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And, my platoon, I think it was one of the last platoons I was male only in at Fort Sill for basic training. Yeah. But we were right next to another platoon that was co-ed.
Yeah.
And I remember one of our drill sergeants was like, "Don't you dare look at all those cum dumpsters over there." And I was sitting there like, again, I'm this little 17-year-old Christian boy.
You don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I'm like, what? How can you talk about that? Like, she might be underage. Like, what is happening?
Yep. You know, so at Paris Island, that's where, I don't know if it's changed now, but that's where the female Marines would go. They did, instead of San Diego, I think they go to San Diego now. But we don't see any of them. They separate them on the part of that. But on the rifle range, that's where we kind of all come together. And I'll never forget, because you're just, you know, you're dealing with Marines and you got that famous just frog voice from, you know, Marine drill instructors and all that good stuff. But I'll never forget, we were staged outside of a chow hall in this platoon of female Marines come walking by, but they were like a couple of phases ahead of us, so they were like doing cool cadences and marches, and it was like angels coming out of the heavens. Like, all of us were like, there is women here, like, because, you know, you
exist.
They exist. You know, you've never seen so many naked dudes in your life until you join the military. That's all. Then you hear these women, like, oh, thank God, like this is great. And that, you know, and so that's where we would see him, was at church, because at boot camp, everybody's religious, because instructors can't get in the church. That's where they, so you could go in there and just, everyone's got their little moon beam doing like the, you know, this little light is mine. And I'm like, I don't even give a shit.
Yeah,
like,
I will do whatever it takes for not to be cleaning right now.
It's an hour on a Sunday that you were drill instructor free for us, and that's where we would see the women on the rifle range, and you'd go, and like, it was hilarious to even look back on it now and be like, good God, like,
yeah, this is, I mean, one thing that I identified when I was, and this is what actually like my trajectory of trying to go and be an elite task or an elite force, was when I went to AIT from basic training.
What's AIT?
Oh, that's after initial training.
Okay.
It might be some other acronym, but I've been out of the Army for a long time. Yeah. I'm a civilian guy, so give me a break, you know? anyways, it's the like your reclass, or not reclass, but your specialty school.
Got it.
So mine was like a mechanic. Everybody there was so fucking undisciplined. Like, we're all coming straight out of basic
bootcamp,
training.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you, like, I'm like, lock it up, you know, like, they're going to come fuck us. And then it was just like a college course or something. And I was like, I was like,
this is what it's like.
Why are you treating me like an adult? I haven't been treated this way in like 9 weeks, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, what is happening?
It's a trick.
And, oh, dude, it was just everybody, nobody had discipline. Mm-hmm. Everybody was like talking in formation or whatever. And I was like petrified. I'm like, they're going to kill us. Like, I'm going to be like these assholes.
Yep.
And there was three of us from Fort Sill. And we were the only disciplined ones. Everyone was like crazy. And that's when I kind of had a respect of like, doing the hard thing will put you leagues above people who had it easy. And that kind of set the trajectory. But going back to the fun stories, like I remember there's three distinct stories, and I'll never forget these moments from basic training, to your point of like, they last forever.
Yes.
One of them was week two, this kid named Church. He was like this overweight, like he just had enough. He's like, I want to quit. I'm out. Like, it's called getting chaptered out.
Okay.
He's like, I'm like ringing the bell, like I'm out. Our drill sergeants were like, okay, yeah, we'll let you out. The kid ended up doing the whole basic training with us up till week 8.
No.
He did everything. The gas chamber, he did all the ruck marches, he did absolutely everything. And they're like, we can't leave you alone. I think week like 3 or 4, the kid was like, oh, I'm going to kill myself. I need to get out of here. So then they had, we had 24-hour fire watch on this dude. And it was like, they normally it's just like one person per hour or whatever. We probably had like 30 people in our bay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that bad. But for him, we had to have 6 people, 2 on each, or one person on each corner, and then 2 people, and yeah, just watch just him
because,
all night.
Just because.
So now we had to have 7 fire watches. And we found out that if he woke up, or if he came to the drill hall the next day with like a magic, broken nose.
Wound
or,
on him.
Broken yeah. nose. That's dramatic. But like, mm-hmm. a bruise or something, like we wouldn't get smoked. So like,
oh, really?
Yeah. For probably like 5 days straight, we just spent the night like
soap in a freaking sock, just beating this dude. With, yeah. We did that.
I laugh now, but that is horrible. Like thinking back at it, and this kid, but he did everything. And then week 8, he's like actually doing well. Like he passes his PT test and he's like, shooting and he's in it. And they're like, okay, your chapter came through. Here you go. They kick him out. Week 8, after he's done everything.
Out of a 12-week?
Yeah, 13 weeks?
Close enough.
No, it's 9 weeks for basic. And okay. Then, okay, yeah, okay. So he was like at graduation, and they're like, you're out, dude. Just savage.
We had a dude that got dropped from us literally a week, but he had like shin splints, and he couldn't even walk. And I mean, I guess they pick up from if you get dropped and, for medical reasons, whatever mm-hmm. you pick up, you go into a waiting platoon. And then when you're, so I guess.
Like phases.
But still, he had to sit there until he was healed. And we ended up picking up, we picked up this kid, man. I'll never forget his name. His name was Roundtree because the drill instructors called him Squarebush. And which like just because, and he ended up ratting on us one night. Because we snuck out to the dumpsters and uh-huh. they made us like go through and take all the good stuff out of our MREs before we did our crucible.
Yeah.
And we snuck out to the dumpsters that night and just gorged ourselves. Oh, dude, so bad. He ratted on us. And so we ended up doing the old sock and mm-hmm. bar soap and a sock to him one night. Like we had like 3 dudes hold down his blanket, and so he couldn't move. And bunch of dudes just thumped them pretty good, and then we ended up getting a lot of trouble for that though. Like our drill instructor hazed the living hell out of us, and so it was one of those things, and they said if we touch them again it would be even worse. And we were literally like weeks away from graduating. We were in third phase, you get to blouse your boots and like get a fade on your haircut, and when we ended up having to unblouse our boots and like they buzzed our heads all again because we got caught sneaking into the dumpsters right before we graduated. But dude, those are some of the wildest times. And like what you will do is like a kid, mm-hmm. And you're going to get in trouble. Like I got smoked every day. Like there wasn't a day I didn't have fire watch from midnight to 1. That was my schedule. Like the drone instructor would just be like, scribe, mm-hmm. Marshall, 00. And I'd be like, fuck. Like I never got a full night's sleep at boot camp. Like my best friend to this day, and this is crazy. People don't believe me when I tell us unless he's with me. I never learned how to clean my rifle at boot camp. I never learned how to disassemble a rifle.
Really?
I got hazed every rifle maintenance.
Uh-huh.
Where they were teaching us, I was on the quarterdeck just getting slayed. And so like it became
that guy.
When I say I was that guy, that they used to take me every time a new platoon would pick up or a new series would pick up mm-hmm. at boot camp. I was the kid that they brought to demonstrate all the platoons. I'd go floor to floor as they're giving their speeches, and that was their demonstration of how they're going to get hazed on the quarterdeck.
Oh my God.
Just hours of that all like. So my rack mate would literally, he knew my combos. He would go and do his combo, undo his, take his rifle, assemble it or disassemble it, get mine in. Like, so he was doing double of everything, and I'd just be standing on the quarterdeck, like literally take my blouse off, and I'd just stand at attention until the drill instructor came out of the house, and just, he would just snap and point at me, and I just haze myself like for all of rifle maintenance. And once I got to MCT after that, they had to like, I was like, yo, can you teach me how to take apart this fucking gun?
Super embarrassing, bro, but I need this.
Rifle range, it didn't matter. And whenever there was rifle maintenance, that meant Marshall, go haze yourself. And I would just get ready, and they would just haze me for the whole rifle maintenance. So I never knew how to disassemble a rifle at boot camp.
That's wild. Yeah, mm-hmm. our last PT test, I woke up with, I ended up finding out later that I had walking pneumonia.
Oh.
But I was like delirious, you know, I couldn't even shave myself. So my battle buddy is what we call him.
Yeah.
He ended up shaving me. And he like got me at, and he would, I can't remember how, but he kept me like standing somehow with, oh, he was behind me. And he would just like tap me. He's like, hey, when you're going to fall, just fall back. And like, he would tap me forward, you know, and kept me going. And then from some, I was like a PT stud back then. I made it through, but I crossed the finish line. Cause we do push up, sit ups, and then the 2 mile run. I crossed the finish line, which is like shit. Everywhere, dude. I blew out mid-run.
No.
Yeah. And the drill instructors were like, what? Like, McKee, what are you doing? Like, I was like, oh, I just had to go to the bathroom, drill sergeant. They're like, just go clean yourself up. And I went, and I remember, like, I went and passed out in the bathroom. And, like, they had to come. My battle buddy threw away all my stuff, got me, like, cleaned me up. And then I don't even remember. I think next day was, like, family day. So so I think my mom took me to the freaking doctor and was like,
during family day.
Yeah, and they, cause
my son's dying.
Seriously. And they're like, yeah, dude, you have walking pneumonia. And they like plugged me in and they gave me some drugs. And I was like, you can't tell my drill sergeant.
That's
drill
sergeant. Wild.
You can't do it. They're going to wash me back day one. Cause that was their thing. They're like, if you can't pass a PT test today, day one wash back. And I was like, there is no fucking wait.
I'm starting over. Yeah, no way.
Not a chance.
Dude, that is some of the wildest times, man. Absolutely wild. And then what we do, like, and put our bodies through just because, like, we're some dumb kid and, like, we want to be in the military. And it's like, I look back at enough. Like, if I did boot camp these days, I'd be like,
yeah,
I'll get it done. Yeah. It's going to get, you know, and so it's just funny to think. I couldn't even imagine going through boot camp now, how much has changed, like, politically.
Man.
In the military, like, we, you know, from customs, mm-hmm. traditions, hazing was just a part of everything coming up, yeah. in the military during our days. And I think we were like that last generation that got to get away with it, like getting hazed.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I had a buddy that just retired out of the Marines as a sergeant major. And dude, he got NJP'd with, not with me, I dodged it. He ended up getting caught in his room. He got NJP'd and we were like troops. I mean, crash trucks and fights and, I mean, the wildest shit. Yeah. And I was talking to him in his retirement and he's like, I was like, what are you doing, man? He's like, bro, I'm just riding out my time. Like, these kids, yeah. they know their rights. They request to talk to the chaplain. Like, they will dime you out. And he's like, dude, you can't get away with anything anymore. He's like, I'm just doing my time. So it's definitely changed a lot in the military. It would just suck.
It does suck because you're thinking about like I don't want to be one of those dudes that's like, oh, my time was so much harder. Like, no,
everybody's before us was.
Yeah, exactly. I get it. But the thing, like, I have friends that are drill sergeants today and they're same thing. They're like, I can't even cuss at these people. Like, and you can't make them do more than like 20 pushups at a time, or maybe it's even more than 10 pushups at a time. It's like, they made us do 10,000. Obviously we couldn't do 10,000, but you just like, at that point you're like, meh, you know, oh, like dude, hating life. It's just not. I remember they smoked us until this was their favorite game. They would smoke us until the ceiling would start raining. With just like in our bay, just mm-hmm. because of
were you guys in squad base then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They would make us take all of our wall lockers down to the drill pad, and then make us sleep outside mm-hmm. for the night. And they're like, if you're not gonna respect this bay and keep it clean, then they'd go up, and then they would just dump everything, you know. this one time, we're
dude, the military is just so wild.
Yeah,
it's people, and we sign creativity. Up for this.
I know.
We sign up, like, for shit pay. Yeah. Like, oh, I want to be a Marine. And like, you're like, oh man, I did this all on my own. I can't be mad at anybody but myself.
Yeah.
That's not on any of the commercials. Like, I wanted to slay lava dragons and wear dress blues and climb mountains and shit. You know, like in the commercial, and I just nut to butt at an airport. I was like, this was not in any of the fine print.
Right. Seriously. no, but we had to move all of our stuff down from the bay down to the drill pad. And this kid had his wall locker and he does a 550 cord, ties it around it, and then ties it around his neck. And we're in the second story and he's like, I'm going to jump this thing. I'm killing myself. Like, I want to out. And the drill, we're like, drills aren't drills. And we're dumb 17-year-old kids, like, can't think for ourselves because we haven't gotten a full night's sleep and we're all like running around like chickens. And we're like, oh no, drill sergeant, he's going to kill himself. The drill sergeant runs up and he's like, what are you doing, private? And he sees, so the drill sergeant, I'll tell the I'll just tell it like this. The drill sergeant goes up, assesses the situation, and he just walks up and Sparta kicks that thing off to the side. And the look of the kid's face when he sees the drill sergeant, like, kill yourself.
Douche.
Here, kicks I'll do it off. It for you. Yeah. And then what we didn't realize, because we're dumb privates, was, and that's, people don't understand, when you're in that situation, you are literally like a dumb private. That's not an insult. That's just an assessment of the situation.
You can't even hardly wipe your own ass at this stage. Like, you think you went from like, oh, I was like an all-star athlete. Like, I worked, you know, through high school. Then you get to boot camp and you're like, dude, like completely lose track of everything. Cause you're just so exhausted and you just broke off the whole time.
And your mind is going in so many different, and they keep you going.
And you're
like,
terrified.
Okay, you got to
look in the wrong direction.
Exactly. And they're like, you got to eat super. I remember the first couple of weeks they put two spoons in our hands and duct tape them every single day for chow. And we just had to shovel as fast as we could. And then they had, we got smoked until we figured out how to get the duct tape off our hands every day for 2 weeks. So we're all like malnutrition.
Oh, for sure.
We're freaking malnourished. Malnourished is the word. You know, I go back to, I think about boot camp and I turn in that dumb
right all over
kid.
Again.
And then we're like, you know, we get like, figure out tricks. We're like, I'm only going to tape, like duct tape the back.
One time. Yeah. I'm going to do one loop instead of like Edward 40 hands where you're just using a whole roll of duct tape. There's so many little things like that, but it was such a good time in your life. Like when you think back at it now, like, but you can't talk about this with normal people, like civilians in a way. Right. Cause like, they're never going to understand what it was like. Just standing there. And like, I was standing in the chow line. Mm-hmm. So you're a tall dude.
Yeah.
Were you in the front or did you eat last? When did you get your chow?
I think they did it by name. So I was in the middle.
Oh,
so I was always in the middle, no matter like if they went.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. See, they would do ours by height. So the little end would go in first. And there was times where I'd literally get my tray and I'd turn and be like, get the fuck out of the. And you're like on the way to the trash can trying to just shove food in your mouth. And you're just like, yo, this is bullshit. Like these little dudes get to eat their whole meal just because I'm tall. Like it's that's the kind of stuff that wears on your mind. And you're just the psychology behind it. They break you down for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, so they did it and they would reverse it. They'd be like, okay, A's in the front. And then for dinner, it'd be like Z's in the front, you know? So what I would always be in the middle. Yep. So if we only got 4 minutes to eat, I would always be towards the end.
Got it.
Like, because it would be like half you get to eat for breakfast and half you get to eat for dinner, basically, is how they did it. So it was like for the first couple of weeks, I lost a lot of weight.
Oh.
But so to finish the story, to make sure that everyone knows that that drill sergeant didn't like kill this kid, was the kid tied the 550 cord to the wall locker, and then it went down to the spool, and it was a full spool of 550 cord, and then tied it around his neck, and just this drill sergeant yeeted it off, and like obviously it
just unravels.
It was like miles of 550 cord, so it wasn't a big issue. But
so after boot camp, you get your orders to where?
Yeah, that was I went to Virginia.
Oh my god, they're just putting you all over the place.
Virginia,
what's that like?
I mean, it was really cold. Like it was just really wet cold.
Okay.
By the time I went, and that was, I don't even remember. I think AIT, I was just angry all the time. Cause I was like, how'd you guys were so undisciplined, and I just hated it. Cause I was at that point, I was 100% indoctrinated, you know, like
drinking
I was
the Kool-Aid.
I guzzled that Kool-Aid.
See, since I was that guy, I never drank it. I think that's why they couldn't get me to like conform all the way. I always fought everything. Oh, so that's where I was just like public enemy number one to all the drill instructors because I questioned everything.
You would probably have
hated me, in other words. Like,
probably, dude.
I'd have been that dude like, shut up, boot, like get in line. You'd be like, this guy? Like I was 100% that guy.
That's awesome. That's amazing because that's definitely like the last couple of years in my, I mean, I went from transition from like drinking the Kool-Aid of like trying to be the cool guy and doing the next best thing to like the last couple of years, I'm like entrepreneurial, like trying to teach the dudes like, use your VA loan, dude. Like you could get a free house every other year, you know, like, and like totally was the shit bag at that point. You know, like,
I'm
like, dude, there is a better way, guys. Like you,
there's a whole other world out there.
You can literally do whatever you want and get somebody else to pay for it if you're just a little bit clever.
Yeah. If you just get out and start your life, which I definitely want to get into. So during your time in the Army, I mean, you did what, 8 years, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that just wasn't for you. What made you decide to go Air Force?
Well, so the Army pissed me off, and it was that recruiter situation because I was like, I did the, I did a stint with I assessed with second group or second bat out of JBLM to like try to be a medic with the Rangers.
Yeah. How was that?
I mean, that was cool. Like all the guys were super good. That's where I learned about like contracting and like, you could make, and this is the most entrepreneurial I was, like I could go do the same job somewhere else and make twice as much, know?
Which never panned out. Cause I did contracted too. And I was like, I'm gonna make $10,000. And you're like, I'm paying Afghan taxes.
Yeah.
Like, they don't tell you that shit. You're like, this is wild.
The big thing is when I got like doing PSYOP stuff, you know, then your bosses, you have no idea who's employing you.
Okay.
And then just morally speaking,
can you get into the PSYOPs part of things? Can you talk about that?
I don't know. What do you want?
I mean, I find PSYOPs, like what was your role? Like, I mean, what, you guys are spying, you guys collect an intel, like what's PSYOPs?
So we don't do intel, right? We gather information and then the intel guys take that information and convert it to intel.
Okay.
Is actually how it goes. Like we just take information and it's cool. There's a bunch of different teams. So there's like, gosh, I don't even know. Like, I don't want to get too weird into it, but there's typically three different teams. There's like a team that'll go in and gather information from just like what the space is in the area. So like how they disseminate information, like, is it just posters? Is it leaflets? Do they have a radio station? Do they have a TV station? Like how established is this tribe? And then there's people that go kind of to the human side of things of like, who's the top dude? Is he a good guy or is he a bad guy or, you know, somewhere in the gray? And then there's a team that figures out how to disseminate the information. And then there's different ways that they disseminate the information, and it's white, black, and gray. And basically white is like, this is an American message from America. I don't even know if I want to go into this.
You're good. Go. Yeah, you're good.
Gray is like, this is a message.
Okay.
Not signing by anyone. And then black is like, this is a message from X people.
Okay. Know? And this is like to village elders or could be to anybody?
Or to the populace. Typically PSYOP, we go in with like the highest PSYOP, like what you want to do is we go in with like the Green Berets and they do their mission. The Green Berets mission is sick. Like they give we want this outcome. And then the Berets go in there and they figure out how to get that outcome. Like they take it from start to finish. PSYOP dudes just support them in that mission. And usually we take it, we figure out how to disseminate what information to get to that outcome. Which I totally nerded out on.
Way smarter dudes than I could ever try to probably figure out. I mean, so are there guys there? Is that where like your recon or Rangers would be in like gathering intel first and then they're passing it down? Or are there PSYOPs like in town? Like how are you guys even like, how does PSYOPs collect info?
Yeah. Typically when I was, the way that I saw it done, or the way that I heard it was done was, the PSYOPs would just be embedded, kind of like a TACP, what I do now. Like we go in with the teams and we're just a force multiplier.
And it's just a one or two dude team that's just rolling in, just collecting intel.
Yeah, typically one dude that's right there and he's
got a terp with them and just, okay. Yeah.
And that's it. And then we assess like how the information is being distributed, what's being distributed. Are they an allied force? Do they like us? Do they not like us?
And then that's getting fed out to the other units that are in the area too, is some of that information. I mean,
so that information goes to the intel guys and then the intel nerds, those dudes sort through everything.
Gather it all.
And then they conglomerate and then they tell us what that information, they don't tell us, sorry. They tell the other units what that information means.
Got it.
They package it really clean. Like I just raw data collect.
Got it.
And then
Pass it on. So after you got that, then what'd you transfer to?
That was when I was assessing and like just a local assessment, kind of like I did for my TACP unit. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go Green Beret because those guys are cool.
Yeah,
they obviously have a cool mission. I love the mission set. And then I wanted the 18X contract. I couldn't get it because the recruiter, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna go to the Air Force and do this job, because I found out that I was living in Washington State at that point.
Okay.
And I found out that TACP was right here in town, like in Boise, Idaho. I was like, I can be special warfare and I can live back home, like I'm gonna go do that.
Win-win, yeah.
And I remember this I remember this recruiter was like, oh, you're going to have to go through a whole new assessment after that. And you're going to have to go through like Air Force basic training and all that. And I was like, okay. Like I was planning on going through Q course, you know, like,
did you have to do all that? Did you have to go through Air Force boot camp again?
No, I didn't have to go through Air Force basic.
Because you had enough time in? You did eight or whatever, or just...
It's because I already went through Army basic, so I was prior service.
Yeah.
I don't know why I did that. I was actually prior service, you know. But if you, from what I understand, if you go from Air Force to, like, Army or Marines, then you would have to go through Army and Marine basic training because, or boot camp, because Air Force basic training is a whole nother level of, like, total bullshit. Like,
I've heard.
Just ridiculous. It's an insult really to our service members. I think the Air Force is run more like a corporation than actually a
it's 100% business. That's why all these Air Force bubbas, they all got like just massive businesses and their own companies. I mean, they set them up from day one. It's a business.
Kind of like senators and their trading, like it's amazing how every senator is just a world-class trader, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They go into Senate making a $200,000 salary and come out with like a $10 million net worth.
The Air Force is interesting for sure. Like I obviously in the Marines, we didn't have a lot of crossover, but we didn't get to do some training. I was fortunate enough to go. They were shutting down an Air Force base or like a part of it in California, and they sent us out there with our vehicles to do some like urban training.
Mm-hmm.
And they put us up, and they're like, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. We show up and there's just the most just beautiful Air Force woman like takes us in. I was like,
yeah,
what the fuck? Like there, I haven't seen a woman like there's in my job, you know, in our RMOS at the time, we didn't even have women anywhere around where we were stationed. So we show up and this woman is just beautiful. And I'm just like, what the hell? And I'm like, I think I was like a Lance Corporal. So I'm just shutting up and just taking it all in. My staff sergeant that I was with was like the biggest turd of a human being, which I didn't know at the time. And anyways, we get there and they're like, okay, you know, you guys were last minute. We had to stick you in the overflow berthings and in the barracks. Yeah. And I was like, okay, like whatever. And we show up. They had TVs, fridges, the beds were made. I mean, it was... And they're like talking to us like this is they're putting us in the slum part of this base. And I walked in there and I was and they had a we had Jack and Jill bathrooms that I shared with like my roommate or my buddy that was in the room next to us. And I'll never forget, opened the door and he opened the door. We're like, we should have joined the Air Force. We're like, what are we doing? Like we're sleeping in our vehicles, like, you know, just hating life 99% of the time. But that was my first introduction to the Air Force is when we went. It was March Air Force Base just there in SoCal. And dude, it was wild, but that was fun training. They let us plow through these houses with our tanks and shit. And
that's sick.
After all the grunts were gone, they're like, hey, you guys can have fun. And so imagine base housing and that was like during the Bush administration or not Bush, Clinton. He started downsizing when he was doing it. Mm-hmm. Well, they shut down a huge portion of March Air Force Base, which was all family housing.
Yeah.
So imagine just rolling down the streets in a neighborhood with a tank. And like we would just full throttle reverse into a house and just blow through a house. Like, I mean, they had dumpsters and cars. I mean, we were hitting, just plowing through cars. I mean, it was my mission to take out every stop sign. Like we would be doing missions with the grunts and they'd be like, okay, we need you down the street. I'd look down the other way and there'd be a stop sign. I'd be like, and just drive down, run the stop sign over, turn around and come back. And they're all standing like, and my crew chief's just like, just let him do it. I can't control this guy. But yeah, the Air Force was a different world, man. Completely different world than anything I'd ever been introduced to by that point in my military career.
Oh, I was 100%. They definitely take care of their people. I got to hang out with Army people the vast majority of the time when I was Air Force because just that's who I would go. I would never deploy with like an – actually, that's not true. My unit deployed with some PJs in Africa. But typically, I was just with Army the whole time. So it was kind of best of both worlds. Like when I got put up somewhere, like I was – for JTAC QC, the last course to get my JTAC cert before I go on to like the actually getting trained.
Okay.
You know, just like – blessed off
the prequal classes in a way.
Here you go, you took the test, you passed the standardized test, now go actually learn how to be a JTAC through your unit,
which I want to go into JTACs.
Dude, I'm sure I wouldn't want to do. I think I would be a like a Green Beret medic.
Okay,
that would be cool. Over it,
So what's a JTAC? Explain to me, for everybody listening, what this, I got an idea, but I've never.
I think it's the greatest career field in the DOT. It's a sick job. So basically we go out with the cool guys, the guys that actually do it. And then you are the most powerful asset on the battlefield. I'm probably biased when I say this.
Why?
But the reason is I have a radio and I have direct contact with a stack of probably a multi-billion dollars worth of aircraft. And I get to control them to drop the largest ordnance known to man onto some assholes that are trying to shoot at us.
Yeah. Know? Okay. That's a flex for sure. I mean, cause I mean, you're controlling A-10s. You're calling in airstrikes.
Airstrikes.
Okay. Yeah. So A-10s, you
spooky
get to call.
And what's
the big boy?
The spooky C-130s. Yeah, baby. Let's go.
What's that like, just talking with those dudes? I mean, it's got to be pretty cool.
It's cool because you're a part of the CAS team, you know, so close air support team. And like those dudes are dudes in the air, you know, like you'll have some robots out there or whatever.
Drones, you mean by robots?
Yeah. Okay. But the dudes in like the 10s or the 15s or the spookies, they're there to save your dudes. Like they're there to rage.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you're just like, it's a humbling experience, you know, to see ordnance dropping out of an aircraft.
Oh, and there's nothing, you can't explain it.
Yeah.
There's
and it's like it. Oh, you have, and then just the amount of knowledge that it takes, like it is kind of a nerdy job actually. Because
one number, I mean, you're taking out friendlies if you're one number off or,
thing.
You know,
and you have to know the battle space as good or better than the ground commander. Like you have to keep track of what's happening in the air, but also the battle space. And you have to know where artillery is shooting and when it's shooting and where it's shooting through your airspace, you know, and then you have to deconflict all that.
How are you processing? Like, do you guys, are you rolling with like, I mean, what year was this? I mean, what year were you guys doing all this? When did you go through training for this?
So I went through 2018 and then I got out last week.
Yeah, you're fresh. I mean, do you guys have like iPads or tough books? I mean, how are you reading from ground to, I mean, what's a C-1 floating at?
So C-1s are low. They're like freaking 500 feet and just in the stack. And that's only, we don't do that when there's surface air or anything like that.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, I never deployed as a JTAC. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be like stolen valor or anything like that.
No, no.
I've trained with plenty of live ordnance, you know?
Yeah.
So we have like a little like S7 or S9.
I've seen this. Okay.
Attached to our chest. And we have a whole picture of whatnot.
Okay.
Some units tie in, or they're starting to tie in with Link 16. And that's just like basically the beacons of where everything is. And our radios connect with their radios. But
is it like a newer Blue Force tracker? Did you ever use it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
I remember going through those and I was like, this is the technology we have. We have people on the moon and like, I have to use this Blue Force tracker. Like
that is wild. But a lot of that also, we're training to the standard of like map and compass, you know, what if all that stuff goes away?
Because
especially if we do a near peer, or a peer-peer, like...
What's a peer-peer?
Like a peer-peer fight, like one of the big three, you know, China or Russia.
If we get in a conflict
with one of them, like, we can't use any technology. Like, if I key up on the radio...
They have it all.
Yeah. So, I don't want to get away with, like, new stuff. I don't want to get into... Just edit that out. yeah, they're like, and week out, like this guy gets court-martialed for giving away classified information.
Yeah.
No, but to keep everything unclassed, like we're training to the standard of, we have a lot of technology, but we don't want to do a lot of like, you know, radio discipline, or we don't want to be keying up too long, and we want to transfer information as short as possible in the smallest packages as possible, so you can't detect us. Because we don't want to be like beacons, you know, of like, oh, that's where the radio frequency is coming from.
Yeah. So if you got the second coolest job in the military, you think?
I think it's the coolest. I'm saying the only other job I would consider
is Green Beret.
And I got to the point, you know, that I was like, I'm never going through a selection again. You know?
It's not easy on
specifically
you.
The medics, like those dudes do work. I got to do some training with some Green Beret medics when I was just a little combat medic, you know? And those dudes are like plugging holes in the back of helicopters and like doing
Everything.
Crikes with freaking spoons, like wild stuff.
Oh, I've seen some shit, especially some recon medics, man. Those dudes, they just don't care. They're like, oh, watch out, make a hole. You stand back and it's like, oh God, I didn't know you can do that. Like,
well, the thing is like in that situation, it's like this guy will die
100%
for sure.
So it's you can't.
I'm gonna like maybe this is there's a 10% chance, but 10% is better than 0%. So I'm
you gotta risk it for the Brit biscuit.
Yeah, baby.
You know, if you're within that golden hour or you're past the golden hour, you're doing whatever you can do to get the guys back. Yeah, yeah. For sure. So you got the coolest job in the military, and you're deciding to get out. Why? Mm-hmm.
This one was tough. I think, well, so I had some medical stuff. Okay. Basically I injured my meniscus and, so I injured my meniscus and I had to get surgery on it. And it was kind of like, hey, it's a bucket handle tear. You can go two ways. We can either repair it and you're going to have a 6-month recovery.
Yeah.
Or if we can't repair it, then we'll just remove the piece that we can't repair. And then it's a 2-week recovery, but you're going to be missing part of your meniscus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, you know, that seems reasonable. In the process of, and I don't want to like throw egg on anyone. I'll just give my side of the story my understanding of the story with the limited information that I have. In this process, there was a long delay. It was about a 4-month delay. And the civilian surgeon was kind of like, okay, let's go. Let's get like, we want to patch you up,
mm-hmm.
discovered this thing and we got to go take care of it now. So I send that out to the med group here, they have about 1200 people and there was deployments during this time. So,
okay. So
I understand like, you know, I'm not going to be
your first priority. Yeah.
It was a rush thing. Essentially all I needed from the doctor or from the med group doctor, the military doctor, was to look at my MRI and say, oh yeah, that is what it is. Like, let's get this guy his surgery. Cause that is the only course of action to this kind of tear.
Mm-hmm.
That took 4 months. So by the time I actually got to my surgery there, the meniscus rubbed on itself and rubbed itself away. So all they could do was take it out.
Good old military, huh?
Yeah. And when I woke up, it was to the point where like the doctor's like, hey, you're either going to wake up in a brace or you're going to wake up with a ACE wrap. If you're in the ACE wrap, we removed it. If you're in a brace, then get ready for a year
long
of recovery,
therapy.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's going to be good as new, basically. And I was like, cool. Sick. Let's go for the brace. You know, I wake up, no doctor around. I had my ACE wrap on and I was like, you know, still like coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the anesthesiologist was there and I was like, yo dude, like
how bad?
This, yeah. How bad? And he was like, I just like get you high. Like
I put you to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my only job. Yeah. That's what they all say. I just put you to sleep.
Yeah. I was like, okay. So then it takes me 2 weeks to get to my post-op. And this is still a civilian doctor. And I'm like, I don't know what, like
anything.
What, yeah. So I get in there and he's like, okay, well it's bad. I was like, sick. And he's like, pretty much I had to remove your whole meniscus. And when I was in there, I realized that you have about 30% of the cartilage that you should have at your age. So you're pretty much bone on bone. And the only thing to rectify that is a full knee replacement.
Which the military is not wanting to hear any of this at this point.
Yeah.
Either
absolutely.
Are you?
Well, no. So, and he's like, oh, by the way. And I was like, okay, so when am I doing that? And he's like, when you're like 45 or 50.
We don't recommend it now.
Yeah, too young like, for you're it. Too young. And I was like, okay, so what do I do? And he's like, you're just going to have to like bite the bullet and deal with the pain. And I was like, what, like it, I, at this point I'm still on crutches and
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Kind of,
oh yeah.
And I was like, okay, well what's the pain going to be like? And he's like, really, really bad arthritis. Like on your knee and you're 250 pounds. So like maybe lose some weight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro. And he's like, you're also never going to run again. And I was like, dog.
checking every box on the way down. Like, yeah, screw it.
Yeah. 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 And he's like, good luck. Like, you know, he's like, you look like you're a big dude. Like, do you weightlift? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, not anymore.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Straight up like that.
Dude, mm-hmm. I mean, he was probably more of a civilian about it, but
yeah.
Of course, like the way that I took in this information was like dread.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I was in a dark place.
Okay.
And that manifested. I was angry specifically at this medical provider on the military side that took so long to review my documents, which I try to like give grace of understanding that side of it. But I just got told I'm never going to run again. I'm never going to ruck again. I'm never going to bear weight again. So like,
so now you're blaming everything on the world at this point. Yeah, you're just pissed.
And I'm like, I can't be a TAC P. Like I loved being a TAC P, you know, like I was all in, I was way into it, you know? And also I loved being in the military. I loved like the whole lifestyle and the camaraderie and like trying to be best. I wanted to assess for STS, which is the Special Tactics Squadron, which is like the top of the TACPs, you know, like that's where they go to do the real cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had all this planned out. I was like, I'm going to go. I had this deployment that I was supposed to go on. And then I was going to come back and assess, you know, that was like, I was like, I got my life. I got the next 6 years for the rest military. Yeah. Like I'm going to
career it. And now your whole world just crumbled.
Oh yeah. So I made some colorful statements to this medical provider,
which probably didn't help any of the situation.
Well, unbeknownst to me, this specific provider was the absolute gatekeeper, the only person that deals with medical discharges in my wing. So she was the one person that I go through for all things medical.
So you're just best friends with her now.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, and also like, because of that, my unit is trying to keep track or keep their dudes safe and make sure that when their dudes are, cause at, like immediately when I'm hurt and they're like, this guy can't be a TACP. It's like, and I make an ass out of myself with this provider. It's like, okay, now we have to protect our people and make sure that they get taken care of when they go through a medical thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up giving me a letter of reprimand for how I conducted myself, which I think is justified. Like it was, it was brutal.
Take it on the chin.
Yeah, exactly. But at that point, like it was game over for me being in that space. So, you know, me.
What do you mean? So like the second your unit finds out, like they're like, they're starting to push you out or what? Is that normal? I mean, are you in or are you out kind of unit or what?
Yeah. I mean, from what I hear of other dudes, like going out, and I don't want to discredit my unit at all.
Yeah.
Like I've been given a lot, you know, and having the ability to be a TACP in that unit specifically, just because of our geological location, like we're in the mountains, we get to do a lot of cool stuff. We're next to the largest range on the West Coast and we have access to A-10s, F-35s.
The best A-10 unit in the world. Cause they just won the Gallant Field or Gallant Hawksmoke. Which I got invited to.
Dude,
so,
that's sick.
Which was the coolest shit ever watching these A-10s come in at like 200 yards in front of you and just strafing. And I mean, it was a cool thing. So like, I could imagine just being that dude on the ground with your radio cause they were out there.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. So now all like,
those dudes win almost every year too. So
it's unfortunate. Like, they're going to Phoenix next year. We won't even get in the Hog Smoke. That's a whole different story. I actually have a pilot that's going to come on. And we're going to talk about that.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it Madman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of them. So I'm trying to get a group of them going. So he's one of them.
Those guys are all good dudes. Anyways, I was very fortunate to be in the unit that I was in and I really appreciated all the training and everything. So I want to forefront this.
Yeah.
And I do understand like the fuck the one to take care of the many. So like, I'm not even saying what they did was wrong.
You're the sacrifice.
Yeah. But for me, like specifically, like it sucked, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And
dreams are crushed. Your career's now, you don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
The military is a very secure feeling when you're in, because like I used to look at it especially when I picked up E6, I was staff NC. I was like, it takes an act of Congress to break me down now. Like I'm set. I just ride this out and I'm going to collect my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's now you're like, now what?
And now on my way out, because I made an ass out of myself, I'm getting kind of hazed by my own unit. And I'm like, I'm a qualified JTAC. Like what is I haven't been treated like this since I was, you know, just a
junior
going through the training, like, which we don't haze anymore. But you know, so it was super confusing. I'm already in a dark spot because I'm told like, you're never going to run again. You're never going to have the livelihood you do, now. And that was freaking, it was tough. So obviously I'm still full time at this point because I'm going through the,
med board.
Yeah. MEB. MEB is med board. I'm going through MedCon, which is essentially like, you're hurt, we're going to pay you full time. Cause at this point I was, I got dropped from, I shouldn't say I got dropped, but our deployment was canceled.
Okay.
The one that I was training for, it took like a year and a half of assessing for it. Cause the way that we get on deployments is we assess for other teams.
Got it.
So like they don't typically deploy JTACs just like out. There's not a group of us that go out. It's just we get attached to like a Green Beret or something, some other unit.
Yeah.
And then the better you assess or the higher the prestige of the deployment, I guess I would put
They take like, higher qualified guys, more senior guys are going to get picked for those deployments, especially if it's like, I don't know if SEALs use you guys, but more Delta.
Yeah.
So, what berets and then those high quality, it's almost like a terp.
Yeah.
The higher the quality of the unit, the better terps they get. And for us, we were getting guys that couldn't even speak English or Arabic. Yeah. Like, so yeah. Okay. I get it. So it's all off of a grading scale. And so
yeah, I was very excited for that deployment. And then from the highest, and this is kind of what started my entrepreneurial journey was, the president ended up saying like, no more special forces in this area anymore. Yeah. And it was like, this hasn't happened since, I mean, we've had special forces in this, this AO since the 80s. Like, what are you talking about? You know? And that kind of like, that's what turned me on to, it was a very safe, secure, like career field being in the military. And I thinking through it of like, I was trying to become the best I could and be in that elite. Like I wanted to assess and I wanted to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
If you rate it towards like, you know, how, not necessarily like by rank, but like what you get selected for.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and I got turned off just, and it wasn't even just like this one guy. It was like this whole, there's no more like no moss, like the whole deployment got canceled.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, all right. Cause I had a full-time gig at the unit at that point. And I kind of walked away. I was like, peace dudes. Like, I'm going to go do my own thing. No idea what that own thing was, but I was like, I was like, I'm never going to have a job again and I'm never going to pay taxes again legally.
Yeah.
And that was like my main goal. And that's what I've been pursuing for the last 2 years. So when this medical thing happened, I'm like, well, now I can't even be a TACP on the side, you know, like now I can't even do this thing as a guard bum and like go hang out with the
boys.
Like, well, I just can't operate. Like they won't keep me. And the way that this whole thing played out, which I don't understand it, because that one point, that one focal point, the POC, the point of contact that I had, I couldn't get a arranged meeting with to save my life. And this is multiple times of like going out and requesting a meeting with this person.
Yeah.
Like my unit was just kind of like safeguarding this. It felt like, and this is just my rendition. I don't know if that's actually the case, but like this, I can only speak my side of it, you know,
for sure. So all this is going on, you're getting just dealt every shit card in the deck one after another, after turning an ACL. So you get dished the news, you're kind of getting pushed out from the unit. How did you shift gears? Cause obviously you got a lot going on now.
Yeah.
So when did that moment come where you're like, okay, like, I'm getting out. Right. I got to figure my life out. I put all of my cards in of being in TACP, being in the Air Force and careering it. Now what? Like now, cause there's a lot of veterans or active duty that are not your scenario, but they're getting out or they're thinking about it. And it's a scary fucking moment when you're going from a guaranteed paycheck, guaranteed TRICARE, you're taking care of your kids, your family are taking care of. Now you're like, I have to take this step, and it's the biggest step of your life.
For sure.
Like, where did you go from there? I mean, like, where did you start to pivot? They're like, okay, I'm gonna focus on something. Like, what knowledge you have, and how did you attack that?
Yeah. So this kind of happened in two different parts. Where the first part was when that deployment went sideways.
Okay.
Like, I just walked away. I was like, I'm done. I'm gonna figure it out. I ended up going to real estate school because I actually to this day don't know why I went to become a realtor, like no idea. But I closed, so this is crazy. I closed on my primary residence with a VA loan. This was back in, I think 2021, like December of 2021.
So a good year to before the market started going to shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or crazy, I should say.
Yeah, it was right before. So I closed on it. It was like a 2.5% interest rate or less.
Mm-hmm.
The next day was when I got the news of my like, and the next day I basically quit my job.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, now I have this mortgage. And what I ended up doing was what's called house hacking. I rented out two of my rooms and that was enough money to pay for my mortgage and then put about $400 in my pocket. So I was living like, I'm kind of like, I got a little bit of a nest egg. Mm-hmm. Like I can pay my bills for about a year. and I have my mortgage covered. So I'm like, I can just like
figure it out. This out. Yeah, you can figure it out.
And I kind of saw that as like, oh, if I have an asset, and before this, I just had a chunk of money and I started like trying to day trade,
mm-hmm.
and I got into crypto a little bit and I started building NFTs, and I would build NFTs and, or not, I would build NFT, storefronts.
Okay.
And then I would sell them to people who wanted to build NFTs or whatever. And I kind of started a little business doing that while I was in,
mm-hmm.
kind of just do a side hustle. I was like, I want to do this while I'm over there, you know, and like bring in side income and like kind of,
cause you have all the time in the world when you're deployed. I mean, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Hours of nothing.
What happened was I did really, really well at that.
Okay.
So when tax season came around, I got
raped.
Absolutely boned. And okay. I'm like, I'm not going to take 100% of the risk to give you 40% of what I
make. Oh, absolutely.
And then maybe, you know, lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, how do I not pay taxes? So I'm looking at like moving to like the Key Islands or like Costa Rica or something.
An offshore account. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. You hear all the stories.
And then I get into, that's why I went to real estate school. Cause then I find real estate and I'm like, oh, depreciation. And like everything I put into this, because it's a rental property, I get to
write it off. Yep.
I'm like, whoa. So then I started trying to educate people on like how to purchase a home and to do it as an investment property, but you like as a primary residence that you want to convert to a specifically veterans. Cause like the VA loan is one of the most like sound, extremely valuable financial products known to man.
That yes, but the information is so misused, mm-hmm. misunderstood. Because my wife's an agent.
Yeah.
And so she does a lot with vets too, but mm-hmm. she became an agent because we got horrible advice and I blew through my whole life, not life savings, but my 401k pull drain. That's how she was like, we got screwed so bad. She's like, this will never happen to us again. I'm going to become an agent just from what we learned.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so sad that there's so many veterans out there that have or qualified for the VA and they have no idea where to even start or how to use it. So is that something that like you've kind of really dove into lately for the veteran community or any veterans listening? They're like, hey, we don't have to go, they can reach out and we'll link everything to you at the end. I mean, I'm sure we could talk for hours about the VA because I've listened to my wife on the phone all the time about it. But so you started learning things, right? Mm-hmm. So let's hit some cliff notes like, hey, there's huge advantages of using your VA loan because you could buy technically a second home with it if you're already there's so much stuff. I don't even know how to like dive into this.
Yeah, you can reuse the VA loan and I don't just focus on veterans and using the VA loan. It's just a very, very powerful loan product
mm-hmm.
because you can go in for 0% down and you don't have to do insurance or mortgage insurance on it. So it's a very cheap product to use. So I take all this information. I go back to my unit. I'm like, guys, you know that you can buy more houses with your VA loan. So just like refinance out of that, take into an FHA loan
mm-hmm.
and then you could even qualify do a cash again. Yeah, cash out refi and then go buy another primary residence. And what I was saying, like if you do this once a year, like I know it sucks to move, but if you do that once a year or once every other year, by the time you get to your 20 years and you do that all the way through the military, you would have 10 homes.
So why aren't they teaching us this in the military? This is one of the most frustrating parts of me that the military 100%, I'll probably get some, one of them, this guy I work with very well, he's big in the military and help. No one ever was like, hey guys, we're going to sit you down for a financial savings class. Or hey, you guys have this thing called the VA loan. If you start buying now a rental property in your little hillbilly ass town you're from, by the time you retire, you could own the fucking town.
Yeah.
Like, it's so frustrating for us. So you're figuring out these little...
I mean, I want to answer that question because... I believe, and this is where it's going to get hot. This is a hot take. I believe that's the answer to that question is the same reason why they don't teach us how to write checks in school.
In school.
Why don't they teach us how to invest our money or how to use our money or what even money is? Because they say like, basically you have to work for 20 years to build up your retirement. But by the time you get to that 20 year mark, like money is not going to be worth the same.
Mm-mm.
Money is just a transfer of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just gathering money, that is losing, it's dissipating its energy. You have to spend it on things that will start generating an income that keep up with inflation. And I believe that's from the Rockefellers. I mean, they dumped money into the school system.
Yeah, I'm a tin hat, bro. Dude, I will dive.
We're going for
I'll dive. We're going to have to come back and do another episode on that. But yeah, bro, I'm 100%. Like, they set you up to fail so bad. And then they're like, we don't know why all these guys are struggling. We don't know why there's the homeless population is fucking 50% veteran. I don't know the exact percent of veterans. Don't quote me on that. But there's such... We fail as a society, and you go from being these war fighters and learning all these traits and skills, and then all of a sudden one day they're like, "Hey, you just got out a couple days ago."
Yeah.
It
was last week, last Friday.
Last Friday. So, okay, today's Monday. 4 days. 4 days. You've been out of the military, and if you didn't have what you,
I wouldn't have anything. I would have a bullet in my head. That's what I would have. Yeah. And this is why I'm so passionate about this, is because the military will use you up. The government will use you up and then make you fucking kill yourself.
For sure.
Why would they want we might have to edit this.
No.
Why would they want patriots to be armed and trained?
And have knowledge.
But the thing is they can't keep somebody in the military. If I had the 6 rental properties that I bought last year.
You're not going to stay in. You're making chump change and your homes are producing.
Exactly.
Why would you stay in?
They want to keep us dependent. They want to keep us sheep, you know? And then they want to give us a rifle and tell us to go kill babies.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm sorry, I'm getting all fired up.
No, I get it. I mean, I was never told to kill babies, but...
Yeah. My point isn't to say, like, the military is bad. My point is to say, like, I think everybody should do a job that they love to do or do whatever they want.
Yeah, and there's people in the military that absolutely love their jobs. I mean, I have buddies that are careering it, and I mean, they're literally retiring the end of last year now, so I would be at that stage in my career, which is, I look back at it, and I'm like... Thank God I got out.
Right. Yeah.
But I did it because I have so much more going for me now that I got out of the military. But you're right though, man. I mean, they train us but to be war fighters and then what? Like as I'm getting out, they're like, oh, this is how you write a resume. Like, oh, I drive tanks and pull triggers and throw grenades. Like, there's nothing like that. And there's no fight. I mean, they give you these bullshit financial classes that you sit for, but you're checked out. You're getting out. You could smell the barn. I mean, I'm headed home. I'm EAS and soon. Like the last thing I give a shit about is a resume. Like I'm just gonna fucking wing it, you know. Yeah. Like I just give me at. That's how I was when I was ready to go. I was ready to go, and so that's kind of. I don't know what that whistling was, but that's kind of one of those things. Like, but you're 100% right. It's we're set to just fail. And I believe that it does go back if we have all of these young Marines or young just active
service members.
Any branch, but you have a couple of rentals and you're able, you have that entrepreneur mindset. Why would anybody in their right mind, unless you truly love the military, but if dude, I had a couple houses that were pumping out enough for me to survive, I would have been out in a heartbeat.
Well, the thing is even if you love the military and you love your job and you want to stay in for your 20, I would have still stayed in for my 20 if I could have. What I suggest is why not be financially independent without your job. Mm-hmm. And this is not just for the military. This is for any job. Like do your job if you love it. That's cool. I don't care. Like I'm not trying to say you have to be an entrepreneur. You have to have a bunch of rental properties, but why not do both?
You have a guaranteed paycheck in the military. I mean, the smartest option would be to stay in.
Yeah,
you have the guaranteed paycheck in the military. It's never going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's where they should be teaching these men and women how to side hustle.
Right.
There's so much that they could be doing online in their communities, anything like that, or at least their children. Why are you not teaching your children how to side hustle or just to hustle period?
Yeah.
Because every single cent that you profited, none of it would ever be touched because you have your guaranteed paycheck from the military.
Right.
Granted, I don't know your finances, but in sense, you should be able to make 100 profit everything that you're making outside of the military. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but nobody ever. I mean, I would like to think things are changing now because obviously the entrepreneur mindset is growing and I mean, look what you're doing now. I mean, all of us in this room now have things going for us. So, but it's like, I didn't when I was, even as a staff NCO, a 20 something year old guy, dude, I was renting a house and driving to work every day, doing my job. If someone been like, hey dude, you buy a house now, flip this thing, you can no. And so I think that's a big part in the veteran or the service member world. I think that's something that really needs to change, is to start changing the mindset. Especially as we're kind of drifting away from war times. I can see when I was in like that. I mean, dude, I was literally did my first deployment, I was back 6 months, and before my 7th month mark, I was back in Iraq again. Yeah. And then it was just like over. So, I mean, we were operating at a much higher tempo than I think a lot of these guys are now. I would love to reach out or have somebody reach out that was listening to that is in the, and see if they are doing that route. And if they're not, why not? Why are these staff in? Because I know there's a lot, I have buddies that are, I mean, one of my business partners that I'm working with, he's a reservist. He runs a command for a reservist unit, and it's like, he's so smart. It's like, he helps, but like, who else is giving back?
It's a crazy mindset, because like, I was almost shunned from when I did this entrepreneurial thing, and I'm like trying to teach, and I'm just like young, like, dude, did you guys know you could do this? And it's like, I don't want to take on more debt. I don't want to, like, I want to pay off my mortgage
is never going to
as fast as possible. And it's like, no, don't, like, leverage that money, like, and then put a renter in there and they're paying that. And then that's a tax write off. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, getting all like crazy, I'm just like golden retriever energy. And these guys are like, dude,
I think a lot of it has to do though. And I'll probably say this all the time on this podcast is nobody hates successful veterans more than veterans. Mm-hmm. When you start hearing, you're like, I don't know what it is. I mean, you get crucified for
indoctrination, man. They like the military does not want you to be. They want you to be reliant on the military.
They don't want you to be successful on your own.
Yeah, the government wants you to be reliant on the government. I mean, look at everything that's happening in the world. Yeah. Because if you're not, then why would you be there?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like an abusive relationship, you know.
So, to kind of shift gears a little bit, are you thinking about starting or a little business in order to, or how? If I was a vet listening to this, and I'm like, man, this guy, okay, like if he's got, how many houses do you have up there? If you don't mind me asking,
I have 9 properties.
Okay, you got 9 properties, so you're doing really well, and. If I was listening, like, are you putting together like clinics, seminars? Is there anything that these people can reach out to you and be like, okay, hey, listen, dude, like, I want to know, like, is there any advice? I mean, that you can send people. I mean, how do we go about that route?
Yeah, totally. So I tell everyone I don't sell anything.
Yeah.
But I put out a lot of free information, and I do that on all the socials, and I'm starting to get into YouTube. And then, my wife she's a gangster pilot, and she's helping people get into the aviation community. Cause that's a whole nother, like, aviation is a community that's ran by the slumlord that is the FAA. You know?
We're going to have her on. Yeah. I got to hear about this.
She is the one you actually want to listen to. Okay. Like, she is brilliant. But
so you're putting out free information.
Yeah. And so we do it on, I'm on all the socials, the_Matthew_McKee.
All right. We'll tag you in all that.
Yeah. Yeah. And really what I want, like, I solve problems for other people. So I go in and I do coaching and I do all that.
Cool.
But it's not necessarily like I'm putting stuff together and I'm trying to sell it. I just solve problems for people who have more money than me.
Yeah.
So they want to pay me to solve their problems, you know, because their problems, so I can essentially pay somebody else to solve my problems, you know?
Yep.
And rich people pay better than poor people. But I did this thing in the last 2 years, and most of the properties I bought were creative finance. So it was like subject to stuff, and it was, assuming loans, or it was, owner finance, and just finding those deals and whatnot. Yep. Most of the people I try to communicate to is like, the people that are just getting in and maybe have a home or don't have a home yet. And it's just like trying to tell them what the power that they're missing out on.
First time home buyers, your starter family.
Mm-hmm. But how to leverage that to become an investor in the future.
Got it.
Without taking away their livelihood now, just kind of showing them the other side of things.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, man.
Yeah. I mean, cause I had a lot of mentors that got me where I am today.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that didn't need to take the time to do it. And my biggest thing now is if somebody does reach out, it doesn't have to be about finances too. I got hosed on my way out, you know, like it was like kind of a perfect storm of how this dude is not going to get any benefits, how he's not going to get a military retirement, how he's not like, now I have to fight with the VA to get anything covered, and get it military cover or military related or whatever the term is, service related, service connected. Sorry guys, if you're editing that, to get it service connected. There's too many vet suicides.
For sure.
And I think a big struggle is finances.
100%.
So it's not just like real estate. You don't have to pay me to be your realtor. You don't have to buy my class, but I want to keep bullets out of vets' heads.
For sure.
Like, if you need someone to reach out to you, or if you want to reach out to someone and to talk to them, like, you have my social, like, talk to me, we can BS, yep. You know, like, I just want to help vets in the good times or in the bad times, dude. Like,
it's to get rid of that loneliness, right? Like, mm-hmm. the stress, the loneliness. Yeah. I mean, and obviously with me having an organization, and we're about to hit our 10-year mark, I think,
dude.
Next week is going to be a decade of doing this. Like, I got, dude, I never thought in a million years I'd have a business that's about to hit a decade into a charity out of all things. But it fucking sucks, man, what these guys and girls go through, especially when they're getting out. And that transition stage is the most vulnerable stage that, you know, and there's things I'm going to talk about down the road that is going to, it is going to be a hot fucking topic in the veteran world. But I feel at this point in my life, I can talk about them because I've watched this I just haven't started this, right? It's been 10 years of dealing with vets, wounded vets, broken vets, lonely vets, like the dark side of the veteran community. There's a lot of growth and there's a lot of great things that are happening. But I feel that if there is vets that are out there that can offer anything like you, just offering, hey, you need, that's what the veteran community needs now more than ever, because obviously with politics and the way this country is looking, and just it sucks, especially when you serve your country, deployed or not, or you sign that dotted line to defend this country forward and here, and then to see this stuff, it really weighs on the veteran community right now. And so I think that's really, I commend you for just throwing yourself out there and letting us put your social out there, as far as, man, you went through a pretty shitty time. You got kind of exiled from your unit, your fault or not. And, you know, and then you went from riding this wave, like the all American dream, and you finally got your dream job, and now it just, everything crumbled. Instead of getting down on yourself, which it happens, but you didn't stay there.
Right.
You find a way to, hey, the fuck I got to do next. Yeah. Right. And that's where I feel that a lot of vets just have that heart. And I've gone through my dark times. Everybody has, but it's like, okay, how long am I going to let this last? Like, this sucks. You know, I got out of the military to better my life, but now I have nothing, like, you know, and it's just like, am I going to, woe is me my whole life? Right. Or, but it's like, where do you start? So the fact that we're able to share that with you is like, okay, guys, like, we're going to link all of your social on here, and I hope people reach out. And, you know, it's like, I hope we can really get some guys are just to start thinking that mindset. Like, there's so much money to be made out there these days, between side hustles and real estate, investing, crypto, whatever it is. And I'm going to have a guy on here soon that, I mean, he's a crypto god. And so he's going to walk through so we can see just his points and little tricks. I'm going to jump into it this year. I've fought it for years, and this is the year I'm like, fuck it. I sat down with my wife, we're going to do it. But it's just taking those little steps, right? Like, where do I start? And so that's where I want to help people with that as well. And so they can follow a journey. But man, it's been awesome talking to you. I know we have so much more. I think I might have you on with your wife, because, I mean, you're doing so. I mean, is there anything you want to touch on real quick before we wrap this up? But, man, it's been pretty.
It's been great.
Kind of doing it all.
I appreciate you bringing me on, and I'm excited to. I know we're going to try to do some stuff. I scheduled a trip in May.
Okay, so let's touch on that really quick. Yeah. So you got your pilot's license, right?
Yeah, I'm like right at my check ride. So
you're right at your check ride. Your wife, you got a ring on. Your wife has got her pilot's license. You guys, after we met and filled out of one of our trip slips, which it was pretty easy for you. So that's pretty new. So I want to hear you. We'll get into that off air, I guess.
Okay.
So we send you a trip slip, and how it kind of works for people listening is with our organization, we send, if you host an event or you just have a skill or a trade or anything like you and your wife, you fly into the backcountry, got your little planes, and you guys filled out one of our trip slips. You're like, hey, let's take these vets into the backcountry of Idaho, fly around. We can land, play golf, eat some lunch. And then we're back in Boise by dinner.
Yeah, and we want this to be like an ongoing thing.
For sure.
My wife, she's a ATP, so an airline transport pilot. So she has like 3,500 hours.
Good for her.
She's very successful, high-hour pilot. She's also a CFI, so that's just a certified flight instructor. Mm-hmm. So the thought is like actually getting the vets in and like letting them go teach them how to land a plane, you know, and like let them fly it to tool around a little bit. And then I'm really into like mindset of how, not just like the financial thing, like the financial, I believe financial security is a big struggle for vets, but
absolutely,
I think I only got there because I had the mindset of having to become independent and then just self-reflecting on like, this is, maybe it's not my fault that this happened, but it's my responsibility to deal with it.
Yeah.
So I really want to like mentor and coach other people, you know, around me of how do we obtain a self-reliant mindset coming out of being so indoctrinated on being reliant on another service, you know?
100%. It takes a lot to unbrainwash yourself from the military.
Yeah, it's indoctrination. And that's like, this is kind of coming from my PSYOP days of like,
for sure,
this is shit that I did, you know, at a much smaller scale, but I get to watch it in the news and I get to watch it real time. And I'm like, we're doing this to our citizens, like 100%. Our civilians or our, especially our service members, you know, and 100%. It's like, it breaks my heart. And that's why I want to combat that. And I think like you were touching on the veteran community is it's our responsibility now. Like they've had, I mean, how long have we had the VA, right? There's a government funded, I don't know why I did that, but it's a government funded, like the VA's out there and everybody complains about it. There's not a single good review that I've heard. It is our responsibility to build that community and give people resources to go out and talk to. Like, I don't know how I'm going to help these people or these vets. I don't know how I'm going to help them, but if somebody reaches out to me, I'm going to fucking figure it out. You know,
absolutely.
Like, same with you and same with what you've been doing for a decade and you're doing amazing things. So I want to be a part of that. I just want to go and like freaking, if I can fly someone around and help them.
That sounds like a horrible day.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like a horrible day.
We go play golf and stuff.
Yeah. Like, why not? I mean, and even if that brightens that guy's day up or that woman's day up where they come home to their loved one or whatever, they're like, fuck, today was a good day.
Yeah.
And that starts that motivation because that's all it sometimes it takes. It's just that the little spark inside of these guys.
Like, we all got fucked over at one point.
100%. And so if we can show them, like, yeah, this is our story. This is what we're doing now. Yeah. Like, this is how we're able to help. And if that turns one guy or girl around where they're like, man, like, okay, let's do it. Like, I'm going to get off my ass. I'm going to stop. Dude, my biggest thing this year, I got off social.
Dude.
Greatest thing. It sucks for me because I run a living off of, not my personal, but, like, I run businesses socials. But now with mine, I've completely gotten, it's only been, I think like eight, what's the day today? It's only been a week, but my wife and like, it's sad to me of how much anger, depression, just, weight.
On,
cause I'm just fucking all day scrolling and I'm just seeing this negative bullshit all day long. And the second I remove that, bro, it is. Yeah. One, I've gotten so much done. I mean, for Christ's sakes, with the Brothers Rabe here, credit to those guys, launched our podcast.
Those dudes.
You know, I'm starting so many adventures this year already that I would have not been giving 100% of my attention to. And I think that is a big thing, just getting these guys unplugged. I went to physical therapy yesterday, and my guy, you know, he's complete opposite of what I am. Love the dude, but we are not, like, on the same path. Political, light, whatever. He's like, man, did you hear what's going on? I was like, I don't know anything.
He's
looking at me like, what do you mean? I was like, I unplugged. And he's like, oh my God, this year already. And he starts listing off all this shit. And I was like, you know what? Doesn't affect me because if the world's going to end, it's fucking ending anyways, if I'm watching it end or not.
Uh-huh.
Now I don't have to wait or I don't have to carry that weight anymore.
Yeah.
So that was one of my biggest New Year's goals to myself is the detox. And I'm going to give myself 21 days to start a new habit. And it's mainly to start building my habits now and without a phone. And then I'm going to look at that as far as just business. I have my business hours, do what I have to do, and it goes away. And that's how I'm one of those people. I got pulled into the addiction. Mm-hmm. Wasn't the likes or comments. I've built a community in my direct messages. And I post one thing, dude, and I'm talking to 50 people all day. And it just, that's what consumed my time. And so I have to like turn all that off. And, but that's where it starts is finding those little things like, okay, what's my first step? Do I put the bottle down? Do I stop smoking weed all freaking day? Right. Yeah. Like, and that's what we need to get the vets into. So dude, once again, thank you so much for coming on. I know I was excited. I want to have more conversations about you. One more time, give up any information where people can reach out to you and then go from there.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So it's the Matthew McKee it's the _ Matthew _ McKee, MatthewMckee. And then I just want to hit on, like, I'm going the opposite direction that you are. And it's from a mentor that I listen to all the time. And he provided this, and it was in a story form. So he's like, hey, let's say every day after work, you get off and you watch Friends for 3 hours, every single day, 7 days or 5 days a week.
Yep.
Instead of consuming information. So like I'm on my phone all the time now, but I never consume the information. I'm creating information.
Got it.
I'm kind of going the digital real estate route of like, I'm trying to build YouTube videos and I'm trying to build Katie's YouTube stuff because she's a super interesting person and it's just telling the story. And basically it's like, hey, instead of watching Friends.
Puts
like,
up to the people who watch.
Yeah, put a podcast on Friends and tell them everything that you love about Friends and why you love it and the stories and like, and start breaking things down. Yep. And if you do that for 10 years and you commit to the input, you don't commit to the outcome. So you don't care about, I want 50 likes on this or I don't want 10 million followers in the first year. You just say, I'm going to post once a week for 10 years. By that 10 years, you're probably going to be a lot better at YouTube or social media than you were when you started.
Oh, for sure.
And you're going to have something that, you know, I'm not going to throw a percentage out there, but you have a chance. You have a chance of somebody consuming you and going viral and making money off that. If you're just sitting watching Netflix every day,
not getting anywhere.
0% chance you're going to make money from that.
Mm-mm.
You know, unless you like, I don't know.
Reviews or splice it or something like that.
Somebody's going to drop in the comments and be like, oh, really? Because I make $10 million a year.
I'm 15 years old.
Yeah.
Like, shut up, kid. Yeah, I get it.
But, dude, this was great. Thanks for letting me talk at you
for came on
an hour and a half.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, no, we've done longer. So I appreciate it. Thanks, dude.
Right on.
Thanks, buddy. Cool.